This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
A masterful and highly respected lawyer who successfully prosecuted 105 of 106 felony jury trials, including 21 murder convictions without a single loss, and the author of three number one New York Times bestsellers, Vincent Bugliosi, has written what promises to be one of the most explosive, powerful, and important books in many years, an unprecedented look at the monumental crime behind the Iraq War. The book is The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. Vincent Bugliosi joins me live on the line. Good afternoon, sir, and welcome back to the program.
Happy to be on the show, Coy. You interviewed me on my book on the Kennedy assassination.
Absolutely. Yes, which, indeed.
By the way, a couple months ago, it won for a record-breaking, I won for a record-breaking third time the Edgar Allan Poe Award for Best True Crime Book of the Year for Reclaiming History. And Tom Hanks is doing a 10-hour miniseries now for HBO on the book on the Kennedy assassination.
Wow.
That was the book, you know, as you know, that's the equivalent of 13 volumes of 400-page books. My current book's a little shorter than that.
Yeah, well, you spent years on the Kennedy assassination.
Oh, yeah.
And it is arguably the definitive book recapping everything we
right.
know at this point about what really happened.
Right.
So there's going to be an HBO show
about
it.
A 10-hour miniseries. The book has been referred to as a book for the ages, and that centuries from now people will be reading it, and I'm very proud of it. It's my magnum opus, but the current book, more than one person, just yesterday, in fact, said, I've heard it many times, it's the best true crime book of my career. I won't say that, but it's certainly the most powerful and explosive book.
Vincent Bugliosi is my guest. The book is The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. Three-time best-selling author, all sorts of awards. Vincent, you could have written a book about anything. Why did you sit down and write a book which basically lays out the evidence to charge our current president for murder?
Yeah, one thing before I answer that question, when you were talking about three books, number one, for your audience, they may or may not know that I prosecuted Manson, of course, and wrote Helter Skelter, which is the biggest true crime selling book in American history. Why did I write this book? I could give you a politic and a high-minded answer to that, but it would not be an honest one. I'm going to give you the honest answer. I wrote this book, Coy, because I wrote it out of anger. I do not want this guy, George Bush, to get away with murder. I don't like to see anyone get away with murder, even one murder. O.J. Simpson got away with two murders. I got so angry I wrote a book, Outrage, The Five Reasons Why O.J. Simpson Got Away with Murder, shot up to number one on the New York Times bestseller list. Bush, in my opinion, and I feel very strongly about this, and I think I prove it in my book beyond all reasonable doubt, he took this nation to war in Iraq on a lie, under false pretenses, and therefore, under the law, he is guilty of murder for the deaths of over 4,000 young American soldiers who have died so far fighting his war. And let's not forget, Coy, about the over 100,000, and that's a very conservative estimate. Some estimates go as high as 1 million. The over 100,000 innocent Iraqi men, women, children, and babies who have died horrible, violent deaths because of Bush's war. I find it interesting, Coy, that although billions of very harsh, condemnatory words have been said and written about Bush in the last 7 years, up to now, other than talking, no one has done anything about it at all to George Bush. No impeachment, not even an investigation of him, nothing. But in the book, The Prosecution of George Bush for Murder, I put together a legal case against Bush that could, we don't know if it's going to happen, that could result in his being prosecuted for first-degree murder in an American courtroom. I set forth the legal architecture for the case against Bush, the overwhelming evidence of his guilt, and I hope, Coy, that we'll be able to get into some of that evidence in the program, and the jurisdiction to prosecute him. In fact, Friday, just a couple days ago, the publisher sent out a copy of my book with a cover letter from me to each of the 50 state attorney generals in America, asking them to read the book, and if they agree that the evidence of Bush's guilt is clear and there is jurisdiction to proceed against Bush, and I've offered my services to the prosecutor in any way that he sees fit, which could range all the way from being a consultant up to and including being appointed a special prosecutor. But at this stage of my career, Coy. I don't have time for fanciful reveries. I never in a million years would propose a prosecution of the President of the United States if I didn't feel there was more than enough evidence to convict and that I was standing on very strong, firm legal ground.
We're honored to be talking with Vincent Bugliosi. The book is The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. Bugliosi, of course, a best-selling author, author of Helter Skelter, Reclaiming History, The Assassination of President John F. Kennedy, and we are honored to have him on the program. Before we talk about the evidence and exactly what how you sort of built this case and this argument in the book. The question that many will have is, well, you know, are you some crazy liberal? You got an axe to grind? what's really going on here?
Yeah, well, I've been a Democrat for years, if for no other reason that unless there's a compelling reason for me to be otherwise, I am always, and let's underline the word always, I am always for the little guy. That's the main reason why I've been a Democrat throughout the years. But my political orientation is not rigid. For instance, in 2000, I supported John McCain's run for the presidency. But whether I'm arguing to a jury in a final summation or writing one of my true crime books, Coy, credibility has always meant everything to me. And I'm not boasting if I tell you that if you talk to my peers around the country, the word that they use to describe me more than any other word is the word credibility. My only master, my only mistress are the facts and objectivity. I have no others, and I can tell any member of your audience, whether they believe me or not, I have no control over that, but that if a Democratic president had done what I believe George Bush did, I would have written the same identical book. I can also tell you that I'm getting calls in radio shows around the country from people who are saying words like this: Mr. Bugliosi, I've read most of your books. I respect you, but have you lost your marbles? What in the world are you? What in the world are you talking about? Prosecuting the President of the United States for going to war? My first question is, have you read the book? And the answer, 100% of the times, is no. I have yet to talk to a person who has read the book. I'm sure there are some people out there, but I have not talked to a person who's read the book that thinks there's anything crazy about this book at all. In fact, it's identical to every other true crime book I've ever written. I present the evidence plus the applicable law to prove my case. But those who haven't read the book, they just think it's extremely far out. A funny thing, I don't have a computer. I'm still in the 19th century with the yellow pad and pencil, but now and then people send me stuff from the Internet. And a couple weeks ago, I got something from Amazon.com, was printed up, and they said that in radical thought, my book is number one in sales in the country, just above Marx, Lenin, and Machiavelli, which is a lovely group to be involved in. But my point is, how can a book be radical when I do nothing other than follow the letter of the law? And I've written, as I say, several true crime books that have gotten up to number one, and I've had people as recently as yesterday say that this is the best true crime book that I've ever written. I don't know if that's true, but it's certainly the most powerful and explosive book. But there's no political motivation here. I mean, Bush is an unpopular president now. He's nearing the end of his term. Why in the world would I write a political book attacking George Bush? And by the way, if that were the motivation, is it just a coincidence that I'm able to come up with a tremendous amount of evidence against him? So I hope your audience realizes that this book has nothing to do with politics.
We're talking with Vincent Bugliosi. The book is The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. Vincent Bugliosi, of course, best-selling author, Helter Skelter, the best-selling true crime novel in publishing history. So you've mentioned the evidence. Let's talk about some of that evidence. What did you discover, and what did you lay out here in this book that you believe really points towards a prosecution of this man?
Yeah. If you can take a little note down, jot down, that I also want to talk about the fact that this book, prior to last Monday when the New York Times did a big story on it, was blacked out completely by the national media. I'd like to get into that because I think your audience is going to find that very interesting. Let's talk about some of the evidence. Obviously, my book is full of evidence of guilt against Bush, but let me talk about a couple points. In George Bush's first speech to the nation, Coy, on Hussein in Iraq, October 7, 2002, Cincinnati, Ohio, he told the American people that Hussein was a great danger to our nation, either by Hussein attacking us with weapons of mass destruction or by his giving these weapons to a terrorist group to attack us. And he said that this attack could happen, quote, on any given day, unquote, meaning the threat was imminent. The only big problem for George Bush is that on October the 1st, just 6 days earlier, the CIA sent Bush its 2002 National Intelligence Estimate. That's a classified, top-secret report that represented the consensus opinion of all 16 U.S. intelligence agencies on this issue of whether or not Hussein was an imminent threat. And on page 8 of the report, it's a 91-page report, it clearly says, and by the way, what I'm about to tell you and your audience, to my knowledge, has never appeared in any major newspaper or magazine in America. Why, I do not know. The report clearly says that Hussein was not an imminent threat to the security of this country, that he would only be a threat to us if he feared that America was about to attack him. In other words, Hussein would only be a threat if he was forced to fight in self-defense. So we know then, not think, but know, that when Bush told the nation on the evening of October 7, 2002, that Hussein was an imminent threat to the security of this country, he was telling millions of unsuspecting Americans the exact opposite of what his own CIA was telling him. If we had nothing else at all, and there's so much more against Bush, this alone shows that Bush took this nation to war on a terrible, terrible lie, and therefore, all of the killings of American soldiers in Iraq were unlawful killings and therefore murder. And it gets worse, Coy. On October 4th, just 3 days after the October 1st, 2002 classified report, Bush and his people had the CIA issue an unclassified summary version of the classified report so they could release this unclassified version to Congress and the American people. And this unclassified version came to be known as the White Paper. And in this white paper that was shown to Congress and the American people, the conclusion of U.S. intelligence that Iraq was not an imminent threat to the security of this country was completely deleted. Let me repeat that. That conclusion was not shown to Congress and the American people. It was completely deleted. Every single one of these all-important words were taken out. So Congress and the American people never saw any of this. And, Coy, it does not get any worse than what I just told you. And my question is, how evil, how perverse, how sick, how criminal can Bush and his people be, yet unbelievably, and there's no other word for it, up to this point, they've gotten away with all of this, and over 100,000 precious human beings are in their cold graves right now as I am talking to you because of it. Now, there's other evidence. I don't know if we're coming up to a break or not, but I can get into evidence with you.
You're good. We're talking with Vincent Bugliosi. He is the author of The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. Of course, a successful attorney for many years, best-selling author. His book, Helter Skelter, detailing his efforts to put Charles Manson away, is the biggest-selling true crime book in publishing history, and we're honored to have him on the program. There's also the Downing Street memo or the Manning memo. Is that the same thing?
No. They aren't the same. Actually, the Downing Street memo got a lot of attention. Was in newspapers, magazines, mentioned many times in books, and I mentioned it in the book. And it's something that if there were a prosecution of Bush, I would mention. But it's somewhat ambiguous, so I don't want to spend too much time on it because there's no source for it, and the words used are ambiguous. But there's another memo called the Manning memo, which for whatever reason received very, very little attention, and every time I bring it up, hardly anyone knows what in the world I'm talking about. But it's much more powerful than the Downing Street memo. On January 31st, 2003, less than 2 months before Bush ordered the invasion of Iraq, on the rationale that Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, Bush and British Prime Minister Tony Blair met in the Oval Office with six of their top aides, including Blair's chief foreign policy advisor, David Manning. After the meeting, Manning prepared a five-page memo stamped, quote, extremely sensitive, unquote, summarizing what was said at the meeting. And he wrote that Bush and Blair expressed their doubts that any weapons of mass destruction would be found in Iraq before they invaded Iraq, And here's where it gets very, very bad for George Bush. Not Blair, but George Bush. Manning wrote that Bush was so worried about the failure of the UN inspectors to find weapons of mass destruction in Iraq that he talked about three possible ways, Manning wrote, to, quote, provoke a confrontation, unquote, with Hussein, one of which Bush said was to, quote, fly U-2 reconnaissance aircraft over Iraq, falsely painted in United Nations colors. And Bush said if Hussein fired on them, he'd be in violation of UN resolutions, and that would justify our going to war. So, Coy, here we have Bush telling the American people, telling the world, that Hussein was an imminent threat to the security of this country, so we had to strike first in self-defense. But behind closed doors, this small man, George Bush, was talking about how to provoke Hussein into a war. Now, Coy, if Bush honestly and sincerely believed that Hussein was an imminent threat to the security of this country, which was his main reason for going to war, that's what he told the American people, the thought of provoking Hussein into a war obviously would never, ever, ever have entered his mind. I was on the Dennis Miller show a couple weeks ago, and Dennis fell hopelessly in love with the Republican Party at the time of 9/11, even though it happened on Republican administration's watch, and I would assume that he'd be disappointed with the Republican administration. But anyway, the American people and Dennis Miller, they fell hopelessly in love with Bush, and his approval rating went from 50 to 90%, even though 9/11 happened on their watch. So I'm on the show, and I say, Dennis, and by the way, I poke fun of Dennis in my book because it's silly, some of the things he said. I said, Dennis, let's assume you're defending your client, George Bush, and I present David Manning as a witness, and he testifies to what your guy said on January the 31st, 2003, the Manning memo. I said, Dennis, other than you're trying to hide beneath the console table, what would your response be to David Manning's testimony and the Manning memo? And Dennis is very, very bright. He's very sharp. He says, I'd ask for a recess. A courageous publisher. And his name is Roger Cooper over at Vanguard Press, and he published the book. Now we go to the audio level. That was something I never gave a second thought to. It was handled either by the publisher or by my agent. Well, like for Reclaiming History, Simon & Schuster did it. This time I get a call, Coy, from my agent. Vince, I can't find any audio company in America that's willing to do the audio for the book, so we were able to get the BBC to do it. But that's out of the country. It's available in this country now, but the BBC did it. As I'm talking to you right now, in production, there is a documentary for the big screen based on my book. The producers could not raise one penny in America for it. The money had to come in from Canada. When the book came out, as with all my other books, it was automatic. Let's say the publication date was on a Thursday, I'd call and say, you know, when am I coming to New York? Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever it is. Not am I coming to New York, but when. And I was always on national television, always, without exception. This book, I did not fly to New York City. There was a complete blackout of the book for well over a month. When I say a complete blackout, I'm not exaggerating. I'm talking about the mainstream media. No television, no network, no cable news, nothing. Turned down everywhere. It was so bad that ABC Radio literally turned down money from my publisher to take out a paid radio spot on the ABC network. Now, that has changed a little bit since last Monday, because the New York Times wrote a big article on that fact, that I was being blacked out. And since that time, it's opening up a little bit. CNN interviewed me, also a show called the Scarborough Show, Joe Scarborough.
Joe Scarborough, right.
The Toronto Star did a big article on it. But even before that, the New York Times was kind of astonished, and they said that in the article, that although I was being blacked out, the book was already a New York Times bestseller. Last Sunday, or the Sunday before, it was number 12. I think it's either 14 or 12. Now, those numbers are not high for me, But the publisher was absolutely thrilled and ecstatic and said, Vince, you've got to be kidding me. You're being totally blacked out by the national media, and you're already a New York Times bestseller. Now, how did it become a bestseller? Well, number one, the book has received tremendous word of mouth, and then people like you, Coy, having me on your radio shows. I have been on radio, but the mainstream media blacked me out prior to the New York Times article. Now it's opening up a little bit. The book is selling extremely well. It's been sold out in many, many stores throughout the country. I guess you can always get it on Amazon.com. This morning, my wife, she has a computer, I don't. She said it was number 19 on Amazon.com. Now, you got to realize that Amazon.com has over 4 million books. So when you're number 19, that's not just a nonfiction hardcover. That's paperback, cookbooks, fiction, everything.
Sure, sure.
So the book is selling very well. And the belief is that if we get a little more coverage, it's going to go up to number one, because even without that, it looks like on the next week's New York Times, it'll be up somewhere around five or six. So it's long answer to your question. It's doing very, very well. No thanks to the national media.
We're talking with Vincent Bugliosi. The book is The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. And I want to just read just a very small snippet from your book and just have you respond to it.
Okay.
You wrote, if justice means anything in America, and if we're not going to forget the thousands of young American soldiers in their graves whom Bush deceived into thinking they were fighting against an enemy that had attacked us, and if we want to deter any future president from doing the same horrendous thing, we have no choice but to bring murder charges against the son of privilege from Crawford, Texas.
Right. Well, I don't know how I can elaborate on that. You know, if someone commits one murder and we know about it, we prosecute him. And yet, with respect to Bush, everyone wants to protect him. Apparently, it's okay, and I'm being sarcastic now, apparently it's okay for Bush to take this nation to war on a lie, under false pretenses, and have over 4,000 young American soldiers come back in a box or a jar of ashes, but apparently it's not okay to prosecute him or even to talk about it. They didn't even want me talking about it. And incidentally, Clinton has consensual sexual relations outside of marriage, tries to cover it up, and I don't have to tell you how Clinton was savage, not only impeached, but day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, they savaged him. And here, Bush does something infinitely more important, and there's been this notion of trying to protect him. Well, I don't know how long that protection is going to go on, but I've established jurisdiction in my book. Spent many, many hours at the L.A. County Law Library and the Ninth Circuit Library here in L.A., establishing jurisdiction for the Attorney General in each of the 50 states, plus the approximately 950 district attorneys and counties within those states, to prosecute Bush for the murder of any soldier or soldiers from their state or county who died fighting Bush's war. Now, with over 1,000 or close to 1,000 prosecutors out there, and with much evidence of guilt against Bush, I don't think it's unreasonable to believe. If I had to wager, I would say there's no high probability of a prosecution against Bush, but I think there's a substantial possibility that with all these prosecutors and all the evidence and the fact that there's no statute of limitations for murder, you know, Pinochet down in Chile, 33 years later, they brought murder charges against him, and they were aborted because he died. But I don't think it's unreasonable to believe that at least one prosecutor out there, maybe more, will be courageous enough to step forward and say, hey, this is the United States of America. In America, no man's above the law. The evidence of Bush's guilt is clear, so I'm going to bring a murder charge against George Bush. Now, whether it happens or not, I don't know, but let me tell you, this is a very real thing. This book, anyone who reads it will tell you, it's not just some theoretical academic legal treatise. It's a nuts and bolts practical legal blueprint for prosecuting George Bush.
We're talking with best-selling author Vincent Bugliosi. The book is The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. Let me step back here and look. We're attacked. We go into Afghanistan. I find it hard to find people today who still don't support that. You know, the base of attack was Al-Qaeda that we know. The base of attack, they were protected by the Taliban government in Afghanistan. We're sort of hard pressed to find an American today who didn't support that. Next thing you know, we're going into Iraq, and the president and his folks are going to great lengths, as the evidence now shows, to try to link 9/11 and Iraq. And then, you know, there was a different, it seemed like every month there was a different excuse or a different rationale for why we had to go yesterday and get on the ground in Iraq. And then we start to learn about Project for a New American Century. We start to learn about the guys who were in the room formulating this plan. And it seems now, looking back in 2008, and I have felt this way for a number of years, that going into Iraq had much more to do with the future geopolitical maneuvers of America in the Middle East than it did with 9/11, and that 9/11 was the rationale that they could use to sell this move to the American people. But it had everything to do with new bases to fight Iran.
Okay, let's assume that is true, and many people believe that. Assuming that is true, Bush has no business taking this nation to war without getting the informed consent of the American people. It's the blood of their children that's going to be shed over there. Number two, if we assume that what you say is true, by definition, we're also admitting that Bush took this nation to war on a lie. He told us, the American people, the main reason we were going over there is that Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, so we had to strike first in self-defense because he was an imminent threat. He did not tell us what you say was really the reason. I don't know why Bush went to war. People have said, what was his motive? And Mr. Bugliosi, if you can't show motive, do you have a case? Well, what they don't realize is that motive is not an element of the corpus delicti of any crime. The prosecution never has to prove motive. I've put people on death row without knowing for sure what their motive was. All I knew is that they had put someone in their grave 6 feet under, and they had no legal justification for doing so. So I really don't know what his motive was. I can tell you what he said his motive was. He kept saying, Hussein has weapons of mass destruction. We have to strike first. He's an imminent threat. But there are people that say he had other motives, like the one you just mentioned. They mention oil. They mention politics. They even mention some type of a Bush family drama where Bush is trying to upstage his father or complete the job that the father did not do at the end of the Persian Gulf War. Whatever his motive was, it was no good. He had an obligation to tell the American people why he was going to war. And, well, he says he did tell them. But now you're saying that there are other people believe that that's not the real reason.
What are your thoughts on did mainstream media drop the ball when we were going to war and they were making the case?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, of course. It's pretty well conceded that the mainstream media did not challenge Bush on anything. You know, how do you not challenge Bush when Bin Laden is trapped at Tora Bora, and we know he was. Tora Bora, as you know, is this rugged mountain range. It's in the southeastern part of Afghanistan, bordering Pakistan.
Right.
He's trapped there, okay? And he's the guy that murdered 3,000 Americans. You know how many soldiers Bush sent up there to get Bin Laden? Do you have any idea? The number is zero. There were 50 American special advisors sent to Tora Bora, and he also bombed Tora Bora very heavily, but not one American soldier went up there to get the guy who's responsible for 3,000 American murders. Whom did we employ? I'll tell you whom we employed. Afghan, and there's no question about it. I mean, Rumsfeld admitted on TV, Afghan warlords and their tribe, their people. People who would probably sell out their mother, if the money was high enough, and it's been established now beyond all doubt that Bin Laden escaped from Tora Bora by paying certain Afghan warlords. So Bush doesn't send one single soldier to go after Bin Laden, who's responsible for 3,000 murders. He doesn't send one soldier to get him at Tora Bora, but he sends 150,000 American soldiers to go after Hussein in Iraq, who had nothing to do with 9/11 and was as much of a threat to this country as you, I, or an aunt of mine who lives up in Minnesota. So there's a lot of things going wrong here. And at some point, if we have time, I'd like to get into the emotional underpinning for this
book. Yeah, go right ahead. We're talking with best-selling author Vincent Bugliosi. The book is The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder, and we'll be giving away a free copy here in just a few minutes. Go right ahead.
Well, there are people who have read this book who've told me, you know, I have high blood pressure, and I can't read more than 5 or 6 pages of your book, Mr. Bugliosi, without putting it down because they get so angry. The evidence is overwhelming. It's indisputable. If someone tries to dispute it, they're just going to make a fool out of themselves. It cannot be disputed that throughout the hell on earth Bush created in Iraq, with over 100,000 people dying horrible, violent deaths, hundreds of thousands of their survivors crying out hysterically and having terrible nightmares over what happened to their loved ones, George Bush has smiled through it all. In fact, if you look at a photo of Bush and 6 or 7 other people all smiling, who has the biggest smile on his face right in the middle of this horrendous war? George Bush. The evidence is overwhelming, conclusive, that while young American soldiers, 18, 19-year-old kids who never had a chance to live out their dreams, were being blown to pieces by roadside bombs in Iraq, George Bush was having a lot of fun and enjoying life to the very fullest. Now, no one has to take my word for this or the photos in the book, which show him having a ball right in the middle of the war. Bush himself has had no hesitancy in saying things like this over and over again. And as I'm quoting George Bush, I would ask you and your audience to try to imagine in your wildest imaginations Roosevelt, Truman, LBJ, Nixon, during their respective wars, saying things like this right in the middle of the war, and also realize that at the very same time that Bush is saying these words, and I'm just going to quote some of them, all of the horror and the death and the sea of blood and the screams and the mutilations and the beheadings going on in Iraq. Here's George Bush. Laura and I are having the time of our lives. I'm in a great mood. It's a perfect day. I'm feeling pretty good about life. Even if George Bush was only guilty of making an innocent mistake in taking this nation to war in Iraq, not murder, as I firmly believe, with all of the death and the horror and the suffering he has caused, what type of a monstrous individual who could be happy with his life? And he has been happy with his life. I don't know if you know the name Mike McKinnon. Do you know that name? Mike McKinnon was the chief media strategist for Bush in his 2004 reelection campaign. Close friend of Bush, biking friend. He tells the New York Times in 2005 that he's never seen Bush more calm, relaxed, and happy. Happy in the middle of a war when young American soldiers are dying horrible deaths? As recently as this March, Bush shows up at a press conference at the White House to endorse McCain. McCain's a little late. What does Bush do? Spontaneously, with a big smile on his face, he starts doing a soft shoe tap dance routine to entertain the assembled media. I'm telling you, this is a happy man. And this is kind of the emotional underpinning of this book, that not only is he guilty of murder, but he's enjoyed himself throughout the whole war, and I've got all the evidence in the book on it. And this is what's causing people to say that have high blood pressure, they got to put the book down. I've had other people say, Mr. Bugliosi, there's no way that your book is going to make me have more contempt for George Bush than I already have. And they come back to me later, and they say their contempt has risen dramatically so.
Renowned prosecutor and number one New York Times bestselling author, Vincent Bugliosi, author of Helter Skelter, Reclaiming History, The Assassination of President John F. Kennedy. His new book is The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. I've enjoyed talking to you, and thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Coy, thanks so much for having me on your show. I really appreciate it.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.